For all recording, I'll count us in.
Okay. We're not, but we are now.
Well, damn it.
What the f*** is going on down there?
Welcome, one and all, to WTF at TFW, your source for... one guy saying, I really like 3A stuff, leading to another guy saying, oh, I should look at that, leading to another couple people saying, oh, I should look at that, and then the chain begins. Seth, welcome.
I think of it as an infection, more than a chain.
I like the word chain because it has less negative connotations, because I'm usually the one doing it, so I got, you know, preferences.
I like to think that I infected you and others with this sickness that we all now share.
How far will this go? When will you
all
be satisfied?
All the way, baby. All the way.
Also here with us today is Gog Dog.
I would also go so far as to call it an infection.
Are you...
Could be worse, though.
Are you worried? Because I hear that there's going to be a strain of this virus that involves buying a gigantic Metal Gear toy that'll probably cost a couple hundred bucks.
Yeah, well, the thing is I've been seriously interested in this figure for 2 years, so if you kind of want to be technical, you guys are trailing behind me.
Or are we starting to do this thing? Who was into it before it was everyone else into it? I don't know.
Yeah, it's true, though. I mean...
I was into it when they were still playing small clubs.
I got their vinyl with their old band name.
I got their vinyls, literally.
Anyway, I forgot what we were doing. We're here to talk about Transformers. And we're going to start off by talking about another... Right now, I bring up this 3A stuff because there's a convention-related 3A thing that totally distracted me this afternoon. But there's also a Transformers-related convention thing that may... be of some note, which is that there are 500 guests coming to BotCon. I might be overstating things a little bit here, but we have had, daily guest announcements on who's going to be at BotCon 2011. Let's run down the roll call. So first up, David Kay and Flint Dilly. So those are two dudes who I have seen before who I think are pretty cool. I think that I've been at... A number of conventions now over the last possibly even 2 years where David Kay has also been in attendance. So I don't mean to be stalking David Kay, but it might just be something involuntary. I don't know. Also, we've got Greg Berger coming by again, another tried and tested and true bro of the fandom.
You might remember him from those bumpers we recorded in 09.
You may remember him from those bumpers. Or even the interview I did with him at TFCon 2008. That was also...
I didn't hear that.
Oh, well, that was actually up... That's on the TFW YouTube page, I think, actually. That's old-timey. But we've also got... we got a lady coming to BotCon.
What?
Morgan Lofting is coming to BotCon. And she was the voice of the Baroness and various female robots from Transformers Generation 1. And we also got Neil Ross coming, who was Springer, off the top of my head. I don't actually have their credential lists open, but that is the big name that comes to mind when you think Neil Ross. And coming to his very first BotCon, we have the venerable Jack Angel, who played a billion characters. And as I understand it, GMFan 101 has a massive man crush on. So that should be pretty interesting. Now, with all these people coming to BotCon, I think this may be one of the worst times to start trying to buy older toys, because a large number of those older toys are now autograph fodder. I mean, Gog Dog, you got anything that you want to get signed by any of these folks?
Yep, I'm getting my G1 Firestar. I think this is going to be my first and only opportunity to get this autographed. I'm super soaked about it.
Oh, man, I wish I had one of those. I can't afford the aftermarket. I'm jealous. I'm not going to lie. I am actually really jealous right now. Seth, do you have anything that you would like to get signed by these voice actors?
I'm not really an autograph hunter. That's not really something I go looking for. I had a Gallagher's autograph once. I don't know what happened to it.
Seriously?
Yeah. Of all the dopey things to have, Gallagher.
You know,
it was on a piece of a chamois.
There are worse autographs to have.
Carrot Top.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw Carrot Top once in a record store in Sacramento.
Did you run up to him and ask for his signature on your notepad?
No, it was like, hey, look at that. Is that Carrot? That's freaking Carrot Top. Oh, sorry. You're going to have to bleep that.
Damn it.
But that's how it went. Is Jack Angel, is he the father of Chris Angel Mind Freak?
I'm not sure if he is.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I was just...
Cool.
Just earlier today, I had Chris Angel's Mind Freak hit single opening theme song stuck in my head.
Yeah. Do some magic tricks.
Better you than me.
That'd be pretty rad.
Now, here's the thing is, I saw on Twitter, I'm going to use this term just because we haven't used it for an episode or two. Friend of the podcast, CCTFW, mentioned that he's thought that there were three more guests coming to BotCon, and I didn't actually follow up on that, but I think that this may not be all the guests that we're getting.
I thought I saw at BotCon on Twitter say something about that today.
Oh.
But I don't remember. I was skimming through a lot of tweets. I'm starting to regret following Norm MacDonald.
Aw.
He retweets a lot of random questions.
Oh, is he one of those dudes who replies to questions with retweets?
Yeah, but not like the way Kevin Smith does it, where he retweets and answers the question all in one.
Oh.
He straight up retweets the person, so it's like, who's this person in my timeline all of a sudden? And then he answers in a follow-up tweet. And it's...
That can be tweet-consuming.
Yeah, it's not a good time.
I like Sweary65's approach, because he'll do an RT-style retweet with a really short answer in the front. And he'll do it he'll do it even when it isn't a question. Sometimes if you just send him a message like, hey, I think you're cool, he'll retweet that and go like, thank you. And then you'll get this wall of 50 tweets in a row of him thanking people. It's marvelous. I think that they've got a really good lineup of guests, though, for this BotCon. Just bringing it back for a second. it's very, very, very G1-centric. And a couple names that I have not seen before. So I think that the panels could be pretty interesting. And I'm wondering if they're, with this many people showing up and, you know, with it being something that isn't quite a precedent set yet, I'm curious if they're going to try to do another script reading with all these folks at the same convention. But
I don't know. You think they'd have to bunch them up for panels, but do you think they'll be segregated by kind of more like what eras they were? Like, they're not going to throw David Kay in with the G1 guys. And
I'm pretty sure David Kay is going to get his own panel, unless I'm forgetting someone's involvement in something else he was in.
Yeah, BotCon on Twitter said this is actually Jack Angel's first convention ever.
Yep.
So, wasn't that the same with
Paul Whiting?
Yeah, Paul Whiting last year, right?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Cool.
And he seemed to really enjoy himself. He kept saying stuff like, I don't know why I didn't do this sooner. Like, Greg Berger would tell me, like, I should do this, it's fun, and I wouldn't listen to him.
That's why I'm always really happy to see Greg Berger coming back, because I know that he's coming back almost entirely out of the fact that he really enjoys himself at these shows.
Yeah, and he was always, like, hanging around. Like, I remember being at the bar one night and looking at who just saddled up to the bar next to me, and it was Greg.
Yeah.
And he was just hanging out, like, oh, this is where everybody is.
I remember when he paid a hotel room visit to Moonbase 2 and recorded, like, a podcast / video thing with, like, 20 people in a hotel room asking him questions, and he looked like he was having a really good time. He seems to just really enjoy the social atmosphere, which I think is marvelous, because that's the best reason for a guest to come to a show is, I mean, you know, guests will come because they're relevant to stuff, but if they really enjoy themselves too and want to come back and then do come back, I think it's a really positive presence to have.
Yeah, I remember David Kay being kind of cool at the Paramount party in 09.
Yeah, David Kay he's a massive bro. He's cool dude.
Yeah, there was just a bunch of us standing around talking, and then all of a sudden David Kay was standing around talking too. It's like, all right.
Yeah. Now, like, I mean, like,
for all, like, I'm mingling. For all, check me out, mingling.
For all the jokes I make about
Weird Al mingling,
about being constantly at conventions he's at, I'm always happy to see him at a convention I'm going to, because he's a really nice guy to talk to. If these are all the guests we're getting, I'm already going to be quite happy with this show. If we're getting more, then awesome. Maybe one of them can be Jeffrey Combs. That would be really cool.
Well, you gotta think they're holding back on what's his name? Peter Cullen.
What's his name?
Because it'd be weird if Peter Cullen didn't show up.
That's true, yeah.
Because it's like in his backyard and whatnot, and because he tends to show up.
Yeah.
And then you'd think, other what's his name Megatron guy, man, it's rough doing these shows on work nights.
Frank,
I'm tired by the time we get started. Frank Walker.
Smith. Oh, Wilker. All right.
Yeah, you just have to get me started. Get me down the path, and I'm there.
That's so, a case where if you bring in those two guys. Hat yeah. Trick it with another Prime actor, and then have a Prime voice actor panel. That's what I would say. In a magic world where they can get whoever they want, anyway.
Get Weird Al back.
Get Weird Al in on the
David K.
on the Prime
get
panel.
The band back together.
I'd be surprised if Weird Al ever comes back to BarCon.
They should just bring him back and put him on a panel with someone he's never met before.
Yeah.
Put him on the Activision panel.
And then pre-screen all the questions, so only requests for little skits are allowed up. Okay. Now this time it's Rekar Bulkhead. All right, check it out. And
Matt Teager is going to play Bulkhead.
And they're faking the moon landing. Go.
That's another thing I'm looking forward to, is with this many voice actors, we're going to have some juicy, juicy Q&A sessions.
Yeah. Okay, now Ultra Magnus and Grimlock are locked in a closet, and Firestar's got the key, but she's drunk on NyQuil and Prozac. Go.
Moonracer has to carry Firestar home before she gets date raped.
Whoa.
That's why Ultra Magnus and Grimlock are locked in the closet. Things just got dark. Go.
So we're looking forward to seeing you all at BotCon 2011. the voice actor panels, please, you know, have a good time and go forth and ask some Q&A. It should be good times. Where do you think they're going to put Flint Dilly in all this? Like, just pair him up with some of the folks that he wrote for?
He has to come up with scenarios like this in 15 seconds or less. All right, Flint Dilly, you got these characters, they're in a bar, Firestar is intoxicated, go. Script in 15 seconds.
That's going to be the request for him. It's like, all right, I can't think of a stupid situation for them to do a skit in, so Flint Dilly, if you could think of a stupid situation for any of their characters to do, please say it and then have them do it, go. Like, just take a whole new level on the Q&A thing.
I wonder if David Kay is going to bring his family again.
I'm sure he will, because they're all, I mean, this is in his kind of home state, so they can.
Yeah, but after things got creepy, do you think that he has them stay back? Like, don't get involved.
Maybe Guillermo del Toro will show up again.
That would be cool.
Yeah, I missed that.
We should bring him on the podcast. Ask him what his favorite Transformer is.
Start asking, just constantly ask him questions about The Hobbit. See how that goes. And then, I heard you're making what is it, at the foot of the Mountain of Madness? Or
that got canceled.
Yeah, I know. So you keep asking him about movies he's at not working on anymore.
Hey, what about Hellboy 3? What's up with that?
And then he's like, I'm not doing The Hobbit. And I'm like, why aren't you doing The Hobbit? Come on.
Let's move on from this topic, because I think we stopped talking about the people at the show a while ago.
No, we were talking about Drunk Firestar. Come on now.
I guess. But we should move on, too, because we got other stuff to talk about. And
okay.
There are going to be more guest announcements, so let's leave some of that. Let's leave some of that fire for the convention, as they say.
The Unleashed guy.
Yes. He will be appearing as a guest at BotCon. Actually, he will be, won't he? Because we found out who he is. That made me blink for a second. New pick picks! Images picking out. Hey, Gog, what's the picture you'd like to talk about?
We got some pictures of a third-party product by this little company known as Franz Project. Under their little-known banner known as Causality.
I thought for a second there you said Friends Project, and I was really confused.
I might have slurred my speech. I don't know. Whatever. It's not important how I said it. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. We're talking about some Thunder Shred.
The best name.
CA03. Yeah, this is the first of their three Insecticons, isn't it?
Yep.
That they're doing?
Ninja Insecticons.
Yeah. This dude looks rad, and I hope that I can get my hands on him some way or another. Kind of disappointed that he's coming out like next month. Because it's gonna better the next month than this month, because I might actually have a chance to. Because if it came out anytime in the next couple weeks, there'd be no way. But I'm really hoping that this pre-order doesn't sell out fast, because I need to get my hands on this guy. I think looks so good. Are we assuming that he's probably going to be about, give or take, generally the same height as the other Causality guys?
I would assume that that's basically the size they're aiming at, is that kind of like scout-ish size with a bit of width to them.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame, man, that, I mean, it's like $50 US, which is fine, but they're making three. You don't want just one. So it's going to cost, for this set of three scouts, $150.
I'm sure that's why they're staggering them out, too. Like, as far as I understand it, they're going for monthly releases on these. So, at least you're not having to drop like $150 up front. Like, you can kind of, and if you don't like one of them, you can always, I mean, I say this, but I don't think anyone who buys one is going to skip the other two. If one doesn't work for you, you always got the option to skip it. I'm probably going to get all three myself.
Yeah, I really want them. These guys are rad. I think this is the coolest third party product we've seen in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you know? It's Franz Project. So,
and it's Crossfire. So as I understand it, Crossfire is like, it's called Crossfire because a certain designer they know is working on it, and this guy is really good at doing scout-sized robots that have a lot of good personality to their sculpt and their jointing. I'm looking forward to seeing how this thing turns out.
Is it Crossfire or Causality? Or
Causality is a Crossfire mini-series.
Right. Okay.
So it's because I think it's the way it works is like Crossfire was numbered. They don't want to do Crossfire 3 yet, but this guy wants to do all these other Crossfire things. They're like, okay, let's call them Causality. So they're Crossfire colon Causality.
The first two Causality were the repaints of the Crossfire, right?
Yep.
Is that how it worked?
Yeah. Okay. So they took those, and those two, as far as I understand it, were designed to make the focus be on them as individual toys rather than as part of a combiner package. And so that was part of the reasoning behind releasing those, I think. But I'm looking forward to seeing how it turns out. And I love his name. Thunder Shred. Sounds like something from Guitar Hero. I'm into that. I got a 99% on my Thunder Shred Star Power achievement. Seth, do you have any interest in this? These insect ninja bots? I forgot.
Yeah, they look cool as hell, but I'm afeared that the price point might make them a little kind of, I don't know.
Mm.
Like, I'm eyeballing that Shockwave that they're doing pretty hard, but I don't know. I'm going to have to see how it goes when they start actually going up for pre-order and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, how much they're going to be and, like, what else is happening around that time period. I mean, they look rad. I mean, I wouldn't mind having them, but we'll have to see if the price makes them prohibitive or not.
I think an upside with these causality dudes is so far they're really cool looking, but they also aren't having that you must get this now kind of hype that some of the other Fans Project stuff has had. So it seems like if you do hold off on getting it, it's not impossible to just wait for a release, wait for some in-hand feedback, and then make the decision.
Yeah.
So there's always that.
Yeah, but he looks just burly and heavy.
Yeah, he's a burly ninja made of claws. Of
weight. Yeah. That's good.
And I'm looking forward to seeing some more images of his pals too. Although a little bit of a funny side story to this is that I also keep getting questions on YouTube asking if those first two causality guys are going to combine with the insect robots into some kind of crazy combiner. And I think that is probably not going to happen.
Especially since the repaints of figures that already combine into different limbs. I don't think they're going to randomly stick a foot onto an Insecticon. But that would be quite cool. You'd have an Insecticon running around in a Kuribo shoe. All you need is a little key accessory to stick in the side, and yeah. But then they'd have to make it green. They'd have to make a third causality repaint that turned into a green shoe, and then just stick the Insecticon on top of it, and he could bounce around on a Kuribo shoe.
I'm sure that, you know, if enough people bring it up, they'll at least table that for the whiteboard and give it some consideration. Seth, do you have a new pick?
Yeah, most of the pictures that are around right now seem to be Dark of the Moon toy stuff. A lot of store exclusives being revealed.
Tons! And, tons of store exclusives.
Yeah. Go to a store, they probably got an exclusive.
Yep.
Or two.
Or even an exclusive mold, like that Deluxe Prime.
Yeah. And sometimes, for the pick, I don't like picking something that I like. I like to pick something that I could rag on. So I'm going to pick something I could rag on here.
Ooh.
I'm going to pick the Toys Unlimited ARX-01 Polaris add-on kit.
Oh, I'm that's yeah,
the head for RC.
Were we the ones who talked about this before? I forgot who I talked
to. Yeah, we were.
But that was just like a gray prototype,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, well, now it's in color, and it doesn't look better. It does not look better in colors. The gray helmet part looks kind of gummy, like it was just sculpted by hand out of putty. And she's got weird lips, like weird. Not mechanical at all lips on a fairly flat face. Just big plump lips don't look right on an otherwise angular, flat, quasi-robotic face with just solid blue eyes. It doesn't look good.
And it still has that problem I had with it back when we first looked at it, which is that it, you know, for everything it's trying to do, it's always going to clash with the animated hands. Because the hands look like a very particular cartoon style.
Well, just in this picture, the shoulders, it clashes with that. It doesn't look like it fits at all.
Mm.
It looks bizarre. It's like this quasi organic face with this gummy hat on this more rounded, stylized body. It's just, man, I don't know who's gonna. I can't imagine anybody buying this.
Yeah, I think Soul Fury. Oh God, I have to quote Soul Fury's front page article on this. While the sculpt is pretty good, and we've got to give props to the rather nice looking cube packaging. From these images, the finish of the material looks rough and uneven, which unfortunately does not look good on any toy, but especially not on a design as sleek and smooth as animated RC.
I did not see the cube packaging. Can you give me a link for that?
Yeah, right here. copy link location. But yeah, I like how he very politely said that this isn't going to look good on anything.
That's some really nice cube packaging. I'm sorry, that's all I got.
I don't know. If you buy this thing, let us know, because I'm just curious. Would anybody?
I was going to ask you if you were totally going to pre-order this.
No.
No, you're not?
Like those cup heads, you know, those look kind of cool. This doesn't.
Are you sure this is the same one that we looked at? Because
I'm assuming it is, because it's the same project style, and I didn't think that more than one group would go like, you know, I wouldn't assume that someone would go like, hey, those guys are working on that RC head that kind of doesn't work for that body. We should do it better, and then do the same thing. Like, I would assume this is the same group. But
what are these guns that she's holding in the pictures? She doesn't come with, or the head doesn't come with those guns, does it?
The one we looked at
from something else.
The one we looked at way back was going to be a set of a head and a pair of guns. So I'm assuming that those would be.
Because the guns kind of look okay, but whatever the price is going to be is not going to be worth it for two little plastic guns.
Well, you're also getting this really nice cube style packaging.
Uh huh.
I mean,
you certainly are.
Did you see it? I mean, it looks pretty. It's like,
yeah, I'm looking right at it.
It's got six sides, and they're all even.
Yep. It's a cube.
But yeah, I was going to ask you if you knew that six even sides on a 3D object is kind of often a cube.
Yeah, I wasn't sure, but I'm going to believe Soul Fury when he says that it is.
Well, he is British, and he does know better than the rest of us. So
yeah. He certainly does.
He's spot on about this being some really nice packaging. This whole time we've been talking, I've just been staring at this cube image.
If there's one thing the English take pride in, it's their ability to spot a cube.
Yes. Absolutely.
That was part of the royal wedding. Like, the wedding couldn't be completed until Prince William pointed out a proper cube.
Ah, there's a cube over there.
Well, they're brought in, the prince is brought into a room full of three-dimensional objects. And they have to find the cube, the royal cube. And only then can the proceedings proceed.
I'm imagining this. I don't know if you've seen Return to Oz, but I'm imagining the scene out of Return to Oz
when
Dorothy's in that room with the clockwork soldier and she has to find some object. So I'm imagining Prince William in a room full of antiques with a clockwork soldier with a little brass mustache telling him what to do.
Prince Rupert, come over here. You have to wind me up so I can guess at which object it is.
Well, that or the scene from The Last Crusade when Indiana Jones has to pick out the Holy Grail.
Mm.
Or like that. But different shaped objects instead of different cups.
And you know, it only bodes well for this Polaris RC head and guns kit if it gets us to talk about fine films such as Return to Oz and The Last Crusade.
And cubes. Like the Cosmic Cube from Marvel.
Shh, spoiler. It's too soon. Spoiler embargo.
On what?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You can't say, because then it would make it worse.
Yeah. Train's already started. Hey, speaking of shapes, I really like discs, and that's my new pick.
Parallelogram.
In Japan, they're going to be doing Transformers DVD Legend, which is a candy DVD set. Apparently, these are going to be like candy toys, which is a common thing in Japan. Something sold, you know, at the countertop or the candy section of a convenience store where you get a little toy and a piece of candy. I kind of like those things. So they're going to be doing that, but with DVDs. So you get these little DVDs, which have an episode of the Japanese dub of G1. I kind of want to track down two of these. I want to get Webworld, and I want to get The Burden Hardest to Bear, because they're the two best G1 episodes. So I am very happy to see them being immortalized as Transformers DVD legends packed in with some candy. I didn't actually read to see what the release date is on this. I'm kind of just assuming that I'll be able to find these at BotCon, but if I can't, I don't know what I'm going to do. Are any of you guys...
I don't know. For animation, I prefer sub instead of dub, so I don't agree with these being dubs.
Well, it's different when Japan does the dub. Because you know how, like, you don't sub Japanese shows because, you know, they're the best. But then when Japan dubs a show, clearly they did it for a reason. So these are probably going to be superior to whatever it is you got on your Yankee DVDs.
So Seth, you want English language with Japanese subs?
Yeah. Because I firmly believe that the original language is the only one that could possibly be
any good. But you said you like subs, not dubs. So it would have to be Japanese subs on English language.
What? Did I? What I was trying to imply was I don't like the idea that these are dubbed into Japanese because I don't watch any animation that's been dubbed.
Okay.
I prefer subs.
But you watched Gurren Lagann dubbed.
No, I didn't. You can't prove that I did.
You told me you did.
I could have been lying.
Did you write it down somewhere? I'm just saying, as a legal professional, if it's not...
Can't believe everything you read.
Well, if,
can't believe everything
if you it's read. Been notarized, then by law...
It hasn't been.
Oh, okay. Well, you see, that's the important
thing. It hasn't been. I haven't been anywhere near a notary republic in like 1,000 years.
A notary republic?
Notary republic?
Is that a country?
Notary republic's where I buy all my golf shirts. So I hope I can find these DVDs at BotCon. I hope that some fine import dealers will sell them to me at a nominal fee. And we had one more picture, but I felt this warranted its own topic. So, we're going to topic chapter skip ahead in the far superior M4A file that you should all be listening to. And we're going to talk about our first pictures of Masterpiece 10, confirmed to just be G1 Optimus Prime with better engineering and a trailer, sized to be around the same height as Masterpiece Rodimus. And as we said before, it seems like the Masterpiece line is kind of made a few little decisions that might garner some ill will over these last couple weeks. First one being that, you know, hey, thanks for buying Masterpiece Rodimus. We improved him and we're going to sell him again. And apparently some stores have actually put up notices saying, FYI, you can't just trade in your old Masterpiece Rodimus for the new one. So that's already got some people going like, Masterpiece. And now this one is a new Optimus Prime, as GOG pointed out some weeks ago, released within a couple months of a massive campaign about the final chance to own Masterpiece Optimus Prime in his original 2004 form, which has been retired and now has been summarily replaced. So I actually think it looks cool, but I certainly cannot deny that there are many entirely valid reasons outside of the toy to not really be super interested in that toy right now. I am looking at it also and not entirely sure where the increased price tag is coming from, aside from the trailer. I need to know what the trailer does, how it is more than perhaps just a box. But I'm sure we'll get more info as the weeks roll on. GOG, how do you feel about MP10's first pictures?
It looks neat. I can't say that it looks $300 neat. I feel the same way I think that I did the last time we talked about it, which was, I think, 2 weeks ago on the last odd-numbered show. But, even with that not in mind, I just can't justify to myself dropping down $300 after shipping from Japan to get another Prime. I mean, it certainly looks neat. There's no doubt in my mind that the original Masterpiece Prime, especially compared with the newer Masterpiece figures, felt large, bulky, stiff, outdated. This looks to be a worthy successor, but I don't know. I'm not People love Optimus Prime. In Japan and America, like, he is the face of Transformers to so many people. But I'm not a huge Prime fan. I mean, Prime is cool. He's a great character. There are so many other characters out there I care much about, much more about, that haven't gotten toys yet. And that's not to say that he didn't deserve a new toy. It's, I mean, yeah, the whole thing with them pushing people to buy the other one, and again, it's their money. They can spend it however they want. There was never any guarantee that there wasn't going to be a new Prime. In fact, I think that everyone kind of figured that eventually there would be a new one. But it just, I don't know. It's, yeah, like you, I don't really see where the price is coming from. I mean, I guess the trailer, but to me it seemed like there's more going on with Rodimus, and yeah. he was less.
Well, Rodimus' trailer was you see, the problem with the trailer is, like, at the base set, you go, it's a box that opens. What Rodimus did differently was having all those fold-out guns, having the fold-out bit for the Rodimus Prime mode being cut to fit with that mode and everything, so you can kind of see the engineering in there. This one, I'm looking at it, and it's kind of like, well, it does everything the G1 trailer did. Unfortunately, it kind of needs to do something more so than that to really grab me for this price.
Yeah, but at the same time, there's nothing that you could really do without it being kind of...
Put in a sound box and some LEDs, and I'd even be happy with it. Like,
yeah.
LEDs go a long way. Like, if there was a switch I could flip to have that whole trailer just light up like a landing strip, that would already make me go, like, okay, now I'm starting to see it. Put LED headlights in roller, you know, something like that. Now I can start seeing it.
Yeah, it's just, I don't... Yeah, but, like, $300, probably more after shipping. It's because you can't... Most stores are not going to allow... aren't going to ship this for...
They'll be EMS.
So non-trackable method.
It'll probably be 50 to 60 plus for shipping.
I think for my Rodimus, it was $75 just for shipping. Which, I mean, and all I did was add, like, a Reveltech and a little model kit to it, which didn't really weigh a whole lot.
I wouldn't be surprised if they added a good $10 to that, because I know that mine didn't cost that much, and I shipped it on its own. And I actually had something from last week, that axe I got.
Even so, for one figure, shipping $60.
It's still crazy, yeah. I would tell people as a precaution, if you are going to get this, ship it by itself, because unless you're getting it from somewhere with flat shipping, like Big Bad or something like that. Because I got this axe, and I added one little set of coins to it, bumped it up to $50 EMS shipping. Someone told me that they were able to have the option to ship it for $40 sal by itself. So it's like, even that little bit of weight, when you're shipping out of Asia, that can mess with your shipping costs pretty hardcore. And, of course, that's also going to make this thing cost a lot more. Before I go on, Seth, what are your thoughts on the MP10?
Kind of the same. I mean, it does look improved, the Prime itself. But it almost seems like after Rodimus, the price is just going to be more for these things. Because, like you guys... It's hard to see exactly where all this cost is coming from. Like, if it's smaller, and how much was that past Prime that came with a trailer?
That was, that one was around 20,000 yen, if I remember correctly, but that's also under the old costs of whenever that came out a couple years ago. So I'm not sure. You got to factor in, like, the rising cost of oil and blah, 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 but still.
Yes, and that's what I'm saying, is the price is just going to be baseline more for these masterpieces going in the future. So I think I'm going to be more willing to wait and assume a Hasbro release that will be sans trailer and more affordable. I don't think I'm going to get it from Japan with the whole kit and caboodle. It seemed more interesting to do that for the Rodimus, because without the trailer, then you don't get both vehicle modes. But with a Prime, the trailer's just this thing that opens up. So So yeah, I think I'm going to pass and wait for an eventual domestic release.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do the exact same thing, because while maybe the trying to figure out if and when the Rodimus is ever going to come out in America, there's you can't not look anyone in the face straight and say that Hasbro's never going to release this in North America eventually, because it's going to happen one way or another. So.
Mm-hmm.
And they've brought most of the others out, I think. I mean, they never did Megatron, but they did all the others, haven't they?
Yeah, every single other
one. Obviously they did Prime and Grimlock and Starscream in a couple colors. So.
Yeah, and even, like, I'm not even looking at this as a pre-order type thing. Just inside Japan, after the Rodimus fixes, I'm like, Rodimus, I was super hyped for. That's part of why I pre-ordered it, I think, because I'm looking at this and I'm just going, like, it looks so cool, but this is coming out right after Rodimus. I'm going to be having to assume it's going to come out with the same standard of build quality. I'm going to want to wait to see if this design has any points in it that could potentially be completely janked up by a poor factory build. And then, subsequently, am I going to just want to wait to see if an updated version comes out within however many months it took for the Rodimus update to come out? All that said, I mean, there's stuff on here that I think looks fantastic. I think the robot mode's aesthetics are great. I think that the gun storing in the back is a genius idea. The truck mode finally looks really good. It doesn't look like a lot of other high-priced Optimus Prime toys, in that they usually sacrifice the truck mode for the sake of the robot mode. This one actually seems to have, and we got photos from multiple angles, so I'm guessing they aren't just playing certain angles, you know, in these promo pictures. The truck mode actually looks pretty good, and I am really happy about that. It makes me want to eventually try to get a hold of this thing, because it's got a proper, you know, flat-faced truck cab. But that price is real killer, and I'm with this toy, I'm going to just keep making direct comparisons to Rodimus, because this is basically coming out in the same Masterpiece era as Rodimus. And I'm just not seeing why this one costs more than Rodimus did. I am not seeing increased functionality in the trailer. I'm not seeing increased gimmickry in the toy. I'm not seeing anything that makes this look like it would cost more than Rodimus. So I'm kind of confused right now. Got to see how it develops.
Yeah, and especially, you know, I don't, if you go back and listen to the week where most of us got Rodimus, I don't regret not buying Rodimus, and Rodimus is great. It's just, with the amount of problems and everything, and the fact that we're getting another, like, a new release with apparently the fixes and everything, some mold improvements to correct a lot of the problems people had. I mean, for one, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Yamato.
Yamatoed.
Yeah, where, you know, they released the first version of a mold and it's got all these little issues, and they're like, well, here's a second release. Yeah. And, you know, I'm wondering, and again, I'm not jumping on the hate bandwagon or anything like that. I'm going to wait and see, but I mean, it has kind of left a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth just in retrospect. But I am going to kind of watch Takara Tomy with their high-end releases, and I'm wondering if they're trying to approach the complexity and price point levels that companies like Bandai do with their high-end $250, $300 toys, and see if they can match the type of build quality that a company like Bandai can consistently put out, at least in Japan, with their high-end transforming robots, because Bandai has a really good track record of being able to put out toys for that at that price point and have them be, for the most part, consistently well done on their first release.
Yeah, Rodimus was a real rude awakening, I think. Kind of a shake you awake kind of thing, because I think a lot of us were coming off of Grimlock, who, as far as I know, was a really well-built toy that turned out great. He turned out better than any Masterpiece before him. And then when Rodimus came out and people were going like, oh man, Masterpiece never hit this low. And I know I've talked about this before, but you know, Convoy had, he was solid, but rickety. Megatron and Starscream both have many noted problems. Grimlock, it looks like he wasn't a step forward. He was just kind of a freak occurrence, in my opinion.
He was also incredibly simple, though.
Yeah, that too.
And they went as far as new molds from Grimlock to Rodimus, which was the simplest Masterpiece, probably, to the most complicated. Mm. And I hope that they're able to step up their game. And I don't really regret buying Rodimus. I don't want to sound like I am changing my opinion on all that at all, because I'm happy.
Well,
but
just real quick, once you guys like to point out when I misspeak and have a little giggle, earlier you said you don't regret not buying him, and now you said that you don't regret buying him. So I think you're confusing the listeners.
Okay, but it's a course that I hope that they're not going down.
You're good.
That's it.
Oh, I was gonna say, Seth, do you have any thoughts on just the projected quality path of Masterpieces in terms of this MP10?
Well, I can't really comment on the quality of this thing until like I've seen it.
I mean,
you could make some observations based on the pictures, but I mean, I personally feel Rodimus in the hand didn't quite live up to some of the expectations from the pitchers, but even I thought they were really ambitious with what they did. I just don't think it quite worked out all the way, sort of a thing. Mm. And then I can't help but wonder if, and I don't know sales figures or nothing about this, but maybe Rodimus didn't make as much money as they thought, and they're trying to make up for it on a character that they know is going to be in heavy demand. Who knows? I might be getting a little too conspiracy theory on it, but
like TFW moderator Foster Logger said, for all the people that aren't interested in this, everyone else will be, and this will be the cash cow that maybe down the road will finance the other stuff that we want to see.
Very true. Yeah. Very true.
Yeah, and it's not that I'm not interested. I'm just kind of, you know, that price. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That is a lot. And I'm, you know, also, I don't regret buying Rodimus, but I kind of wish he didn't cost so much.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, like, I think if I was going to have a collective generalization for where we're coming from, none of us regret Rodimus, but I think that we're all kind of, we're sobering our expectations a bit based on how Rodimus turned out, and with this coming out within the same 12-month span, I think we're sobered up a little, and we're not getting too carried away with it, because the sad reality of Rodimus is he did remind me, at least, that Takara Tomy actually has a somewhat bad track record at pulling off high-end Transformer toys.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even say that I'm really worried about it, because I can say right now, unless something significantly changes, this will be the first new Masterpiece Japanese mold that I will not buy from Japan. I am going to wait for an American release. I have bought, with the exception of the repaints like Thundercracker, Ultra Magnus, I have bought every single one of my Masterpiece figures from Takara. And I'm not going to own this because I do not want a $300 Prime. So, and that's me. But so, I mean, I don't have any personal stake in whether this turns out good or bad, but I kind of want it to turn out good because I'd like to see Takara be able to compete on the high-end collectible market at that price point and at that complexity level with other companies. And I hope that they can start matching that, because I don't think they have yet.
Well, I think if I do pick it up, I'm probably going to go Japanese, just because if I'm going to get it myself, because I also never had a trailer on my old one, I'm going to be like, I'd like this. If I'm going to do it, I'll just go whole hawk, but I am going to wait till people have it in hand, I think, unless I just have a sudden change of heart. The one thing that I think is hopeful is that, granted, they must be doing some pretty cool engineering kung fu to make his vehicle mode turn out that well with that robot mode. Optimus Prime is also, at his core, a lot less complex than Hot Rod. And maybe he'll have that, like, much like Grimlock had that working in his favor, maybe that will work in Prime's favor, too. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't mind that Grimlock was simpler as far as the transformation goes, because I think that just made the whole package more solid. Like, Rodimus feels kind of shaky. He doesn't quite seem all together all the time. Like, some pieces feel like at any second now they're going to pop out of place.
And sometimes they do.
And, yeah. And Starscream, I don't want to transform him no more for fear of breaking that wing off. But so I really appreciated just the completeness that Grimlock felt like. So I don't mind if it's a simpler transformation. I don't need to move 10,000 parts and spend 45 minutes to get it from one mode to another.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say that actually, given the track record now that you can look back on, I would prefer if they avoided getting overly complex, because I feel that's what struck Rodimus down a bit, is that he was designed really well, but that level of complexity was something that the Takara Tomy's hired factories were incapable of producing at a solid level of good consistency and good fidelity. So
yeah, but on the same note, I would also say that I think my main complaint about Grimlock had nothing to do with the figure. It was the level of simplicity for the price. And I agree with Seth. I don't think Grimlock's simplicity is a knock against him at all. In fact, it's pretty satisfying to be able to pick up a figure of that size and that price point and be able to just go from mode to mode and have fun with it and not have to spend like a dedicated portion of your time like, oh, I think I might transform this figure tonight and move him over here and then sit down and go through it. With Grimlock, it's just pop, 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 you're there, it's done. And you can do that back and forth and have fun with it. But at the same time, you know, the amount of engineering and everything put into that figure, Grimlock was substantially higher priced than figures before it. And again, you know, I understand the price of all this stuff has been going up and up. It just seemed to be a bit of a sudden jump with Grimlock. But I would certainly, if I had a choice, would they be more solid and maybe a little more simpler and at a lower price point? Every once in a while, I think that would be pretty refreshing. But at the same time, I appreciate what they tried to do with Rodimus. I just hope in the future that they can get it right on their first try.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe even see if they can shell out some money and use the factories that Bandai uses in China. I don't know. If they use Chinese factories, I assume they do. But we're going to get more pictures.
Who doesn't?
Go ask him.
No, I said, who doesn't use factories in China?
I thought you said go ask them. Hey,
go to China and ask around.
Hey, you guys do work for Bandai. Looking for Bandai factories.
You know, Gundam, Dragon Ball, that stuff.
I'm looking for the factory where they make the Dragon Balls.
Goku. You know Goku? He kind of rips off some of your mythology.
But we are going to get lots more pictures of MP10 as the coming months come on, because it's coming out, in the fall? So we're going to have a season of hype for it. So we'll hopefully see some more details and maybe figure out a few more things about it. Although, as has been said, you're never really going to know about build quality until you get it in hand. So you are early adopters. Take lots of good pictures. That's all I really got to say. Coming up next on our topic list, we've got... Oh, this might take a while. Let's put an intermission here, and then we'll come back with the stuff we got coming next. I'm going to leave it mysterious, so none of you guys know what's happening. And then you'll be all like, oh, they're going to talk about that now. I'm excited! Yo, we're back after a very lengthy intermission. We're all a lot older and a lot wiser than we were before we started off this little train. But now we're going to talk about what we got this week. And I want to open up with our on-topic, what we got this week. So I forgot to ask before the podcast started if you guys had any crossover in stuff you got. So I know none of you got what I got. That's for sure.
I only got one on topic thing.
Oh, okay. And we know what that is. We talked about that before. So, Seth, let's start off with your on topic thing.
Okay.
Hey.
I got the Perfect Effect Scout Force X.
Are you sure that's on topic?
I don't know. I'm sure somebody will have a problem with it, but
Ooh!
It's close enough. It's close enough. It's a robot that turns into something else inspired by a Transformer.
TM.
So, yeah. You talked about him a bit on the last episode. And I'm going to say I really, really like it. You warned against, people maybe not wanting to spend the money if you're not into the Perfect Effect aesthetic. Mm. I am into it. I love all these little robots, like all the little cassette guys. Even though, like with the cassettes, like the Rumble Frenzy type, the Eject Rewind type, even the Rat Bat type, have modes that I don't really care about. Like with Rat Bat, it's the bat mode.
Yeah.
Bad. With the others, I'm not really impressed with their gun modes. I'm not interested in them. But I love those robot modes. I think Ratbat's big spear mode is really kind of amazing. Just how gigantic it is. I couldn't believe how big it was when I put it together. I'm like, this thing's huge. It's amazing. The bat looks horrible, but this weapon is rad. the Scout Force X, both modes, robot camera, really enjoy both.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just on that criteria alone, this is my favorite thing from Perfect Effect so far. I think the camera mode looks pretty good. Had a little trouble finagling that bottom piece on, the riot shield piece that goes across the bottom.
It's tricky to line it up right. I have some trouble on the edges.
Yeah, like, with me, it's like I could get two of the three holes to line up just right, and then the third hole takes a little coaxing to get in.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you know, all the pieces go together just right. I love that even though they come with like a zillion tiny little pieces, like the knives, the little clip that holds the knife, so there's three of those, the three pistols, the two extension pieces to turn one of the pistols in the sniper rifle. Just all these little bits all store away when it goes into camera mode. So nothing gets, you know, left out and lost. Everything goes in, which I really appreciated and thought was good.
I think the process of loading all those things into the camera mode is part of the fun of the camera mode to me. Just the satisfyingness of once you lock up that last thing, you're like, oh man, everything is in this little camera.
Yeah.
It's all in one
piece. And what's kind of neat, huh?
I was just saying, it's all in one piece. I was finishing my quote.
Oh. And then, like, a neat little detail that I noticed is where the three knives go when you're putting the camera together. There's kind of a little outline of the knife.
Yes.
That shows you this is where the knife goes and this is the direction and orientation for the knife.
I get really hung up on that when I put the knives in.
Well, when I noticed it, I was like, oh, great. Because when I was looking at the instructions and I'm like, okay, I gotta stick the knives in these places. I wonder if I do this in the wrong way, if it's going to get in the way and pieces won't fit right. And then I noticed, oh, here's a handy little built-in guide.
Yeah.
So now I don't even have to worry about it. And it's pretty impressive how snugly the three pistols fit into the camera lens too. Like everything fits just right.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has that same level of detail in all the little molded in circuit bits and everything else that that I came to expect from the other figures. And it's just really, really good. I like the armored up modes for the robots also. Like, you had a little beef with the sniper rifle and shield.
Yeah, I just found that that the robot has a bit of trouble looking like he's actually able to use them just because of the lack of the wrist joints mostly. It's like the really minor thing, but given how, like, it's in comparison to how utterly awesome I find the other two robots.
Right, and he does look cool just kind of standing there, so it's not a complete loss, but I agree. Mm. It is a little limited, but when you see how the Gatling gun can be held two-handed,
yes,
that's pretty cool. And then, like, the third guy almost seems a little bland with just his two pistols.
He's kind of forgettable, yeah, because he's like, hey guys, I have the shoulders that look like the original toy, and I have the camera lens, and I got these pistols, and you're like, and? You're like, that's all I got?
Yeah, but you can put them in some cool, like two pistol wielding Hong Kong action movie kind of poses, I guess.
And you can plug the giant cannon into his stomach, which looks kind of cool.
Yeah, but I'm really happy with it, and don't necessarily buy it on my recommendation, because like you said, they are small, and when you see how small that box is, you kind of start freaking out.
Tiny box. It's like, I think I said this last week, but it's like the box's size actually makes them look smaller than they really are, because the box is just so densely packed. It's like the box is exactly as big as it needs to be. And it makes, like, if you order this online, you pull that box out and you just drop like $90-$100, you're like, oh god, what did I just do? Then you start messing with it. It's way better.
And so far I've been nothing but pleased with except for the wrap up. I've been very pleased, mostly pleased with everything I've gotten from Perfect Effect, and I'm looking forward to whatever they got coming down the pipe next.
Yeah.
So,
I really wish I didn't have a little QC problem on my scouting force where only one of the guns really properly works as the sniper rifle. There's just something messed up in the barrel of one of my guns it messes with the storage too. Is it only works on one certain peg because there's something malformed in the barrel that doesn't sit right on any pegs. But as far as I know, I am the only one who has it to that much of a degree. I asked PA, I mentioned it on Twitter, and PR said, like, well, one of mine looks a little bit off-center, and only because you told me, so apparently I ruined that for him.
Yeah, when I was loading the guns up into the lens, one of them didn't go in as easy as the other two, but, I mean, it wasn't terrible.
Yeah.
And then one of the hands on that guy, the center guy, the leader guy, at least in my mind, he's the leader because he's the one that looks slightly different. One of his hands, the hole was too small, so I just got in there with a knife and twirled it around a little bit and opened it up to get the pistol in. But otherwise, you know, it's pretty damn good.
Yeah, I really love how, I think what I love about them the most is that they're also just a smidge bulkier everywhere than the other Perfect Effect robots I've got.
Uh-huh.
Like, their torso is a little bit thicker.
If I had to do one nitpicky thing about their mold is I don't really like how it looks like all their mouths are hanging open. But, yeah, it looks like they're all kind of going, But, you know, that's a very small quibble.
Yeah. So, I'm glad that you're enjoying it, because I mean it is a pricey thing, but everyone I've heard from, and granted it's really just you and Piaw, is so, you know, 3 out of 3 people say that it was pretty cool. But I mean, the, you know, the consensus, but a lot of the opinions I read of the few that I've read so far is that it is expensive, but it is satisfying regardless. Be fun to watch people hem and haw over these at BotCon. I'm gonna try to make people buy stuff, I think.
I probably will too.
Yeah, good man. Gog, what did you get that may be on topic as well?
I didn't get anything on topic.
Oh, no! Well, I only got one thing on topic, so this will be quick. And this is just mostly a story.
Once upon a time.
Once upon a time, a man in Japan went like, what if robots could turn into cars? He held on to that dream, and he liked to make toys, too. So instead of having walking cars, we have Transformers. And
once upon a time, a person in California, Florida, went into Kmart and they actually had something on the shelves.
That's just ludicrous. I went to Zeller's after I went to a fencing tournament over the weekend. So a Zeller's from out of my town, and they had all these Transformers on sale, which I already had. So I could have gotten the Constructicon Power Core Combiners for $18, which would have been nice. But they had one Battle in Space set marked down to $20, and usually that thing is $30 over here. So I was like, well, why not? I got $20. So I picked up the Battle in Space set, and the Hot Rod really sucks. He sucks. He said everything you need. Everyone was right. Mine doesn't have any overt construction problems. His shoulders are a little bit loose, but they hold a pose. His backpack doesn't lock in place, but the joint's tight enough, so it just sits there fine. But all the paintwork on this toy looks horrible. It all looks like it was applied with, like, thumbs, and it doesn't look like any of it dried properly. Cyclonus is great.
Do the gray parts, like, on the wheels just feel weird to you?
Yeah, they feel...
Like, all the gray painted parts feel weird.
Yeah, it feels, like, chalky and a little bit... Yeah. Like, it feels like it wasn't painted with a brush. I don't know. But, the Rodimus, everyone already knows he sucks. I just was wondering if I'd get one that turned out a little bit better. Maybe I did, but he still kind of sucks. He just feels like a custom toy that someone made, and that person is not very good at customs. I don't know. But the Cyclonus was great, so I was happy with that. And I flipped through the comic book. I haven't actually read it yet, but I was getting kind of a laugh out of the lack of anyone having a neck. Everyone just kind of has these chin pieces that turn into their chests, which I thought was kind of goofy. But it's neat. $20 set. It's cool enough. If you haven't got either of these toys, at least you get a cool Cyclonus out of it. That's all the on-topic stuff I got. I got a bunch of off-topic stuff too. But let's start the off-topic train with Gog Dog.
I didn't really get anything off-topic either. I did get two Portal shirts in the mail today from the Valve store. So that was kind
of
cool.
Was one of them the Three Wolf Moon spoof shirt, or is that out yet?
One of them was that, yes.
Excellent.
I will be wearing that at BotCon. one of the days, I'm sure.
Are you still there?
But I'm different.
It's my big day. that's still my favorite part of Portal 2.
Yeah. Oh, come on! The defective turrets. Yeah. Nolan North. But no, I haven't gotten anything. I've been too busy moving and unpacking, and there's really not been anything out around here. So, and most everything I've got, the last thing I really got was Warpath. And so, but I did just want to quickly mention a couple things that I am going to get.
Previews.
Pretty much. The first one, Hideo Kojima of Metal Gear Solid fame tweeted out pictures today of the in works prototype of Grey Wolf, the cyborg, or Grey Wolf, Grey Fox, the
Grey Wolf Grey Moon,
Frank Yeager, that guy, the cyborg ninja. He of a PlayArt Sky version of him, and it looks in freaking incredible. So cannot wait so hard.
Yeah, I was saying before the podcast, Kojima seems to take quite an interest in having good toys made of his stuff right now.
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and along with that, and the 3A Metal Gear Rex, the original Metal Gear Solid is getting a lot of toy love in the high end market. So
yeah,
there was something else that I wanted to mention too, and I'm completely can't remember. And that it was actually something on topic. Oh well. Oh no, I know what it was. BBTS put up a bunch of I guess they found...
Oh! Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, a seller found a bunch of old Japanese Beast Wars figures that they're selling at a fairly decent price. So I pre-ordered
really,
my...
Really decent prices, yeah. I think.
So I pre-ordered myself a Mint and Sealed Box, Heinlad, and was it Stampy?
Yep.
Yeah.
Let me throw this out there to the listeners, all right? Because some of you guys may not have been around for the era when Beast Wars Neo was at all the conventions. You could get it really easily. For the prices Big Bad's selling them at, and if they're still available, anyone out there who doesn't own Stampy or Corrada, who does not buy them for $10 or $15, needs to reevaluate themselves, because, damn, those toys should be owned by everybody. I would say the same about Mach Kick, but some people disagree with me. But Stampy and Corrada, if anything... You need to buy. If you don't have those yet, those prices are very good, and you should be pre-ordering them right now. There's a lot of good toys in there. I mean, Long Rack is in there too. A lot of people are starting to dig Long Rack. And Mach Kick is $25 for Mach Kick and Arcadis. I think you should all do it, because everyone should experience the manliness of Mach Kick's ponytail at some point. But take a look at their Japanese Beast Wars section. I was astounded by some of the stuff they're selling for those prices myself. Really brought me back to early 2000s conventions. and yeah, Heinrad is in there too. Was there anything else from that you wanted to mention?
That's about it. Those are the two that I really jumped on. And like, there's so many Beast Wars figures out there from Beast Wars 2nd and Beast Wars Neo that I've always really wanted. It just, I never remember to go looking for them. It's not that I can't find them. It's just I never remember. So this is a good chance for me to say, because I love mint figures. So even if they're older, I like to have them new, and I like to be able to open them, and I like to be able to experience them like they were my very own on release.
Stampy and Corrada, man, I love those figures a lot.
But yeah, this was a good opportunity. For me to be able to remember to buy them, since they were been big, shiny, bling bling, buy this.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, check out. Go to Big Bad Toy Store and click on their Japanese Beast Wars section, and they got a lot of cool stuff up for pretty affordable prices. Considering these are all brand new figures of a toy line that's what, like 8 years past.
Yeah. I kept stopping myself on Twitter. I was like, man, I'm starting to sound like a shill with how much I'm flipping out about this. But seriously, $10 Stampy. I don't know. I don't care who's selling it. Someone says they'll sell you Stampy for $10. You better friggin' buy Stampy for $10. Seth, did you get any off-topic stuff? I know you did, but I'm going to ask anyway.
Certainly did.
I know, because you used one offensively at me the other week.
I certainly did.
Very offensively.
Certainly. But before that, just to mention, because I'm not going to get into too much detail about it, even though Kmart won't put anything new out, they are getting rid of some old stuff. Went down the clearance aisle, and they had a bunch of like a tech deck and some other little finger skateboard thing, man. And some... other little finger bicycle thing, and they had some, so all that was on clearance, or not all of it. They had newer stuff like actually on the shelf, but older stuff was on clearance, and some of that stuff came with like little benches and barrels and whatnot that looked about in scale with some other stuff. And I thought, well, maybe these would make good props in the future for funny pictures or whatever. So I got some of that crap. Just for the prop possibilities. So that's all I'm going to say about that. I'm not going to review a little skateboard I don't know nothing about. So
how poseable is the skateboard?
It has 4 points of articulation.
That's BS. I thought this was the 21st century. Where are the ball joints?
The wheels.
They should be ball jointed.
Okay. Start your own high-end, tiny little skateboard company. And
we're going to make them out of soap, because we're going to be proper indie.
All right. So, yeah. And then I was going to say, sometimes we'll put pictures in our little chat window if we're talking about something the other guys might not be too familiar with. but I obviously don't have to do that for Evangelist.
Nope.
Because he already saw the pictures.
Yep.
You see, I know your aversion to people posing posable hands, flipping the bird. I already know that you have a beef with that. So my master plan last week was to troll you on two levels. To troll you with a new World War robot figure and having it flip you the bird, knowing that that's going to get you in a way that it wouldn't get a normal person. So that worked pretty, and it was so great because you had just finished talking about how you're pulling ahead in the arms race. You had just finished bragging about that, and my assassin Aaron just shoots you right in the neck. It's so good.
During the intermission at that, while we're off the air, he's like, oh, by the way, I have this picture. And I'm like, well, what's it? Oh.
So well done, Aaron. Very good job.
Sick.
You get a cookie.
Sick man.
So, yes, I got a World War Robot Portable White Engineer Armstrong. And so this is my first Armstrong, my second World War robot figure at all. And the Armstrongs are the thing that really kind of got my attention. And it was almost like I got that big red as a way of settling for something available now instead of waiting till maybe July when they come out. And I say maybe because from what people keep telling me, they're not really good at getting things out when they say they're coming out. So maybe it will be out in July, I hope. So that'd be good if it is. But then I fell in love with that big red. It's so great. So this is a white Armstrong. It's a zero G type. Just from looking at the pictures, and I actually saw one of the machine guns in person when I met up with that guy a few weeks ago. I like the gun that the 1G Armstrongs come with more than the 0G, but I like the 0G jetpack more than the 1G. I like that it's sleeker, taller. It kind of goes with the shape of the body better.
Yeah.
Than the 1G, which is a shorter pack that is bulkier with more larger thrusters on it. But I much, much prefer that machine gun over the, what is it, a grenade launcher?
Yeah, some kind of
whatever it is that the Zero G comes with. Yeah. But, you know, it has that great weathered paint job. And I did a video, not as good as a Evangelist video, hey, but, you know, we can't all be the YouTube Steven Spielberg type.
You did some kind of crazy effect, and it all went like, and then all of a sudden your Armstrong was there, and I was like, what just happened?
I am a special effects wizard. yeah. So I kind of point out some of that stuff. Like, I was really impressed with the way, just on the back of the head, like there's this one kind of worn bit that lines up with the top edge of the jetpack. And at work, we have a lot of old equipment that is worn and weathered, and they're doing a really good job of identifying the places where things would wear and weathering fairly realistically. And not fairly, very realistically. So that's good to see. I very much appreciate it. And it's a nice eggshell white kind of a color. And the finger articulation is amazing. Like you have your ball joint in the knuckle, and then each joint coming up the finger that you have on your real hand is there. So you have a huge range of motion with those fingers, and it's really great.
I was curious about the tightness and solidity of the finger joints. I mean, I take from pictures I've seen that they are pretty tight and solid, but I'm just curious, do they feel fragile to you at all, or do they feel just as robust as a lot of the other stuff on those figures?
Well, they, as far as tightness goes, at least on this one, that I got, it feels exactly where you would want it to be.
Hmm.
They're not hard to move, but they stay in place once you have. But they're so tiny. They're made of such tiny little pieces. I just reflexively want to be careful with it.
Yeah.
So I'm not looking to get too rough and tumble with it. And I should give a shout out to a message board member. I'm not going to try to pronounce his name. KYLASH 327.
Kylash.
He's the fellow that sold it to me at a more than reasonable price.
He kind of welcomed us.
Very, very bro-ish.
He kind of welcomed us into that 3A thread, too. He was all like, hey, what's up? I've been in here the whole time.
Yeah. Thank you for having other people here. it's been so cold and lonely.
Just been like him and Quinjester the entire time.
Yeah, so it was a price I could not say no to. It was very good. He was very... If he was a state, he would be Bro Hampshire. Would probably be the state that he would be.
Oh, wow.
So... yeah, but no, it's cool. I'm very much looking forward to getting more of all this stuff. And, I guess San Diego Comic-Con is going to be our next battleground in our arms race.
Oh man, I'm already trying to line up some assistance there. And the thing is,
I ran out ahead, already locked down one dude.
I'm lining up assistance, but I am also going to have my trigger finger ready if that stuff shows up on Bambaland, just in case. Some of those things.
Well,
oddly enough, the IDW one I am least interested in, which I guess helps. But some of those things I am really into.
Yeah, well, I definitely want to get the Brambles and the drop cloth.
Yeah.
Have you seen the pictures of the 12-inch version of that drop cloth?
I think so. Is that the one with the slaughterhouse one?
Yeah, comes with two like meat cleavers.
Yeah,
that's pretty rad.
Yeah, I really want to pick that up. I want to pick that up. At least one Bramble and a Popbot. Those are my main wants, especially if they come in those.
Well, you gotta get both Brambles. They're Day Watch, Night Watch.
I want to get both Brambles, but IDW, I feel like it's going to be chintzy pulling that off. I feel it may be.
What difficult. Do you mean chintzy?
It may be difficult to pull that off. I think. I don't know.
Ah. But if you only get one, like if you only get Day Watch, then who's going to watch your night or vice versa?
It's very true.
You got to get both. That's the whole NOM thing, apparently. Night Watch, Day Watch.
Damn.
NOM. NOM, 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 NOM. I'm
waiting for someone to do it. Did you get anything else off topic this week?
I don't believe so.
All right.
If I did, it's not important enough to remember.
I lined up pictures of what I got this week, so I can hammer through this stuff like a hammering on some paper. While I was in Vancouver, I also swung by a shop I visit now and then, and they had a 50% off everything in the store sale. So I picked up two sets of three total rather fragile, elaborate Bugmen from the Bugmen movie that got me into Bugmen in the first place. They're old style SICs, so they are basically just vaguely posable statues that you have to be kind of careful with, but they're designed by a guy called Keita Amemiya, whose designs I adore, so I've been meaning to get these for a long time. So when they were both 50% off, I was like, I can do that. Also in the mail, this was in customs for 2 weeks, and I have no idea why, but I also got a motorcycle made of bug. It is literally a bug stretched on a motorcycle. And also, while I was in the mainland, I found a Super Robot Shogokin, my first Super Robot Shogokin. It is the Altaizen from Super Robot Wars, and it is a very solid figure, and if all Super Robot Shogokins are that solid, it's probably a pretty damn good line. He's got big chunks of die-cast in his shins and in his chest, so he weighs down nicely. He's got a ton of joints, and they all are very smooth and sometimes clicky, and... those accessories, like his forehead antenna can be set on fire. That fire is just a rubbery sheath that literally slides smoothly over his forehead spike, and then you can slide it right off again, no danger. And the big spike on his arm is literally a giant solid die-cast spike. So the Altaizen is pretty damn cool.
I don't know if it's indicative to the whole line, but that Mazinger that I got, some of the joints are starting to get a little loose.
Mm.
Not to the point of him just tipping over at the slightest breeze, but a little loose enough to be disappointing that it's actually even getting loose.
Yeah, once I finish shooting the next couple videos, I'm going to have Altaizen and live on my desk for a little while before I do anything with him. And then I'll see how he turns out. I mean, some of his joints have a built-in click to them. I'm not sure if your Mazinger has that. Because, I mean, if his joints that got loose are ball joints, that is also good to know, because this guy also has a bunch of ball joints.
But, yeah, there's a mix in that one that I have. Like, there's mm-hmm. some that click and some that are just ball joints.
Yeah.
And the one of the ones that's like getting the loosest is one of the hip joints, and that's a ball.
Okay. Yeah. I was also going to say this dude has a really neat little gimmick in that those white things on his shoulders can, like, the hatches, you can click them open and then fold them open to reveal a bunch of cartridges of grenades. His shoulder claymores, as they're called. So I'll see how he turns out. But for the goal of being downsized, affordable solo Chogokins, they really feel like it. Like, they feel like you get this dose of a heavy diecast robot for a price that isn't quite as high as some of those solo Chogokins can get. And I also took my own step forward in the 3A arms race, and I got my probably way the hell overpriced from eBay Noir de Plume. Who is the little human guy from World War Robots that they're making figures of. There's a bunch of different deplumes. They may or may not sometimes be the same guy with a different skin color. I got the black one, because I thought that one looked the coolest, and then in retrospect, he was also possibly the easiest one to get to date, so that kind of lined up nicely. The other ones were membership exclusives or a freebie that you got either from Ashley Wood liking you or buying the 3x3 set of 9 robots last year. Whereas Noir de Plume, you could just buy. So,
let me ask that the hose from his gas mask. Mm-hmm. What kind of material is that? How does that feel?
It feels like I was actually trying to figure out a way to describe it. It feels like proper hosing. It doesn't feel like cloth. It feels like that kind of like those little speckles on it are textured. It feels like a fire hose almost. And it's really beefy. You can't really squeeze it or anything.
Yeah, because in some of the pictures I've seen, it looked almost fabric-y.
Yeah, it has that kind of...
But it doesn't look like it would be made of fabric, but it kind of looked like it was.
It's bendable, but it has that it's not fabric, but it's that texture and that feeling of the outside of a fire hose when it's folded up. I don't know. And it is kind of, you know, that, like, it has this little loop at the bottom or this little U-hook where it plugs into the canister on his belt. And that little U-bend is actually, I think, glued in place. It can bend a little bit, but it's kind of locked in that position. And if you take the little canister out of his belt and take his belt off, it maintains that little U-bend position anyway. It's almost like the gas mask hose is actually holding his belt up more so than his belt is holding it in place. But it's a very impressive figure. It's the 1 to 12 scale. It's 6 inches tall. And the body is basically a 1 to 6 scale, like Hot Toys body shrunken, literally. The outfit is like a Hot Toys cloth outfit shrunken. It's really well stitched. Nothing really feels bulbous, even though it uses Velcro to hold pockets together. You don't have giant blocks of Velcro sticking off everywhere. It's really magnificently tailored. If I had exactly one problem with him, it's that he does not have any kind of ankle tilt, which can mess with having him stand solidly in a lot of poses, but he is oddly pretty good at balancing on the edges of his boots. He's kind of sparse for accessories because he's got a fully tailored outfit and all that stuff, but he does have a pistol. And a couple things that I did not know about him until I got him in hand. The belt has like a... What do you, what, what, Is it just called a belt clip? You know, like the clip that you stick on a belt where you squeeze the edges to remove it? Is there a term for that, or is it just a belt clip?
I'm sure there's a proper name for those kind of things, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, whatever they are, he has a supremely tiny downsized one, but it actually works, which is kind of cool.
Well, as a... How did you pronounce that guy's name that I bought the Armstrong from?
Kailash?
Kailash, yeah. He pointed out that, like, the video that I did for the Big Red, I said that those clips on his bags did not function, even though they looked like they could. He pointed out to me that they do.
Oh, I tried that on mine.
Oftentimes, yeah, he said oftentimes they get all gunked up with the weathering paint and whatnot.
Yeah.
So it can be tough to get them to work, but he assured me that they do.
Awesome. Because, I mean, that's what I kind of like about Noir de Plume is he has on his belt this little set of three pockets in the same little satchel, and they're all just held together with Velcro, but you can't open them, and there is space in there to, you know, you can't really fit anything in there, but there's space there to even just put, like, a little folded-up piece of paper or something like that.
Secret documents.
Secret messages. Noir de Plume also smells of 3A toys, and I'm pretty sure there is paint applied to his clothing to weather it a little bit. Something I did not know about him at all, and I actually could barely test it because it's hard to get your finger back there, is that he has hair sculpted on the back of his head just underneath his helmet, and that hair is actually flocked. It has that kind of felt flock treatment to it. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I read that. I had read that there was hair back there, but I didn't realize that it wasn't just sculpted.
Yeah, it's got flocking on it. Which is amazing, because you will never, like, you can't fit your finger back there to actually feel whether or not it's flocked. I managed to kind of cram my fingernail in, and I was like, oh, hey, the texture's in there. But he's a magnificently done figure. I think he's the same scale roundabouts as your average 6-inch Marvel toys or your average SH Figure Arts, and he looks great with them, especially since he has a proper cloth outfit on top that isn't bulky or anything. I can't get across enough how well done his outfit is. The only other thing I'm kind of worried about is it feels like his torso joints, or like basically the multiple pieces that make up his torso, it feels like they're held together with some kind of rubber band system like a G.I. Joe, which worries me a little bit because those are not high fidelity, but I haven't opened him up to confirm it because I don't want to even try pulling his t-shirt off because it's a tiny figure. It's not like a 12-inch figure where you kind of have a bit of leeway if you want to see how the innards work. This is a very small figure. So I'm probably just going to leave it up to faith that it won't eventually bust. And if you want to get your own Noir de Plume, be prepared to pay a crazy amount for it. There are more de plumes that you already missed the pre-orders for that will be coming, and perhaps the de plume market will even out a little bit more, because as I said, Noir was the only one you could get on its own, as far as I know. All the other ones were harder to get in some way. But Seth, you've got the DIY de plume and the Young de plume on the way, and those were, I think, easier to get.
It's Jungle.
Yeah.
Jungle Battle de plume. Or Jungle de plume. Yeah, I mean, they were just on pre-order at Bamblands. This is a weird name. They need an easier name. But yeah, they were just on pre-order, so I went for both.
Yeah,
and like the whole point of the DIY figures is you're supposed to customize them. You're supposed to open them up. You're supposed to paint them yourself. I think it looks pretty awesome, all white.
I saw something written where they said that if you want to leave it alone, you could just pretend he's a mysterious de plume who is a psychotic clean freak who, like, bleaches himself every day.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to, like, really think up a color scheme that I really want to do to ruin the whiteness.
Yeah. Oh, there was one other thing about the de plume that is a little bit off, is that his right hand is sculpted in a very particular way. So he's got these universal wrist swivels, so they can kind of, his wrist can bend in and out or up and down, and his right hand is sculpted such that it kind of always has to be bending up or down, or it looks like his wrist is a bit busted. So there is my other crit I can think of about it. It's otherwise a fantastic figure. If you can get one for a decent price, it retailed for, I think, like around 55 shipped, prepared to pay 80 to 90 for it on a good day. It's totally cool if you have other stuff in the scale. If you got Fig Arts, if you got Marvel Legends, totally fits in with them really well. I dig them. And unfortunately, they're stuck in customs, but I also have my own Armstrong in customs, thanks to someone on another board.
What?
I got a deal on a Mod Chip Large Martin and a Shadow Guard Armstrong for 122 shipped. And I thought that was okay, because he sent them with priority shipping, so that there would be tracking. And so I was like, I dig that shipping from there to here with tracking can be more expensive than I would like it to be. And I really wanted a Mod Chip Large Martin, and then he had a bunch of Armstrongs, and one of them was black, so I was like, that will fit in well with Noir de Plume, so I picked that one as well. So my backlog shopping list is already majorly shrunken down. Really, the only thing I'm still looking for is Dirty Deeds Birdie. Unfortunately, it's Dirty Deeds Birdie, which means I'm never
going to... Yeah, your willingness to go into the back catalog is going to give you the lead in the arms race.
Only just, though. Only just a bit. Like, what is it? Dirty Deeds Birdie and maybe Iron Panda Damn Large Martin. Everything else in the back catalog, I am, like, biting my lip and just raising my hands and walking away.
Yeah, but you're already in it. You got three back catalog things already. And,
that's true. You're already...
It will have to be a war of attrition. I'll have to maintain my interest longer to eventually win.
But stay tuned, you know, in future weeks for our continuing 3A adventures. And another designer toy line that I got pulled into after we brought up 3A, but I'll bring that up hopefully next week when that stuff actually comes in. Let's move on to some listener questions while we're moving at this pace. We got a listener question from Baron Ransack, presumably Von Joy, who asks, so here's the setup. After returning to your respective homes, you find that your entire collection has been stolen by me. However, I am somewhat reasonable and decide to let you keep all variations and forms of one character. Example, you could keep all of your Ransacks. Who do you keep? Limitations. I said somewhat reasonable. No Optimus Primes, no Megatrons, and no Starscreams. So, considering that situation happened and you had no way of just attacking him, Gogdog, what one character would you keep as far as your Transformers go?
Spastic.
I don't know if that's legal to say, but this is a desperate situation. Seth, who would you keep?
Man, that's tough. Probably Soundwave, though.
Ooh.
Because I really, really love that music label Soundwave. And I have a bunch of G1 Soundwaves. Most of them are reissues, though, so. But I got a bunch.
If I was going to go for sheer volume, probably Movie Ironhide, because I think I have more figures of him than anybody else in the entire Transformers mythos. Which always frightens me when I realize it. That I am maybe like two Voyagers shy of having every single Voyager Ironhide. One day, I gotta set up that Ironhide shelf. But yeah, I'd keep all those Ironhides, because then I'd have a huge amount of Voyager toys that I could totally ball up in a huge sack and smack you over the head with for stealing my stuff. You punk. Baron Ransack goes on to say, and one more question, if you're feeling generous to the guy that stole your stuff. I've been a fan for as long as I can remember, and I've been collecting since about Beast Wars. However, I have a dilemma. I own about 3 to 5 toys from each series since Beast Wars, yet, wait for it, I don't own a single Prime, Megatron, or Starscream. I have repaints and retools, but no official Starscream. I guess I haven't been a main character guy. Anyway, what Optimus would you recommend with a $50 budget for your first Optimus Prime, Gogdog?
Can you still get Classics Prime for under $50 now? Because I would say if that's going to be your first Prime, that would be a good one to get.
I want to say between Classics and Henkei and United, you could probably get him for a decent price.
Let me see real quick.
Because I know that there was a period where he went really high up in price.
While he's looking that up, that accent you were doing was sort of turning into like a Bavarian Christopher Walken.
Yeah. Is there something wrong with that?
There are some...
I'm just saying.
Yeah, there are some mint in sealed box Classics Primes for right at $50. So I would definitely... I think I'd recommend that. I mean, that's still a little pricey, seeing as... I mean, I think I got it for like $20 at retail like back in 06, but... It's still a really solid figure. Another one that I think is a really great Prime figure is the most recent Prime that we got was the War for Cybertron Deluxe, and you could still probably get that for
$10 probably.
Yeah, between $10 and $20 easily, because in some places they're still on peg. So I'd say between those two, those would be my first two choices right now. I mean, there's several other Primes out there that are really great, but I'd say a Classics would be a good first start, and the other one would be good just because it's fairly cheap, it's a really great toy, and it's still fairly available right now.
Seth, how do you feel about those recommendations?
I would have to agree. I can't really think of anything that I would recommend over those.
Yeah, if you're only going to have one Prime, the Classics Prime does a very good job of doing it all at a pretty decent price. I mean, I don't know what it costs now. If you wanted something a little bit more super robot-y, the top tier of that is Cybertron or Galaxy Force Prime, but I don't know if that is still $50 or if that's gone higher than that at this point.
You had a Reveltech Prime.
You could. That's always an option. If your budget is under $10, definitely get the Reveal the Shield Legends Optimus, because that one has, like, the best Classics Optimus vehicle mode since ever until MP10 comes out. But I hope that answered your question. Go get yourself a Prime. This guy doesn't have any Starscreams either. Just, okay, bonus question, Gog. If you only were going to get one Starscream toy, what would you say?
So you put me on the spot now. For one, I want to say, like, he seems to be beating himself up over the fact that he's not a main character guy. There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
There's nothing wrong with that at all. There's plenty of characters out there that need love besides the big ones that they make toys for two or three times a year. So there's no reason with nothing wrong with showing love to other figures, but I mean, again, there's several incarnations of classic Starscream. I think all of us would agree that mold isn't perfect, but it's a fun little mode, especially in robot mode. Just pick yourself up a classic Seeker.
Yeah, that's actually...
A classic Starscream. There's like three or four versions of the classic Starscream out there, including the Japanese versions. You could certainly find one you like.
Yeah. And that's one of the, probably an easier toy to find than a Classics Prime right now, but... If you do want a Prime, then definitely, you know, prioritize that. I'm not gonna though make a bonus question out of a Megatron because that's too tricky. Too many variables in Megatrons. So thank you for your question, Baron Ransack. Our next listener question comes from Daniel. Came from a Pelican. That's how you pronounce that. He says, "So here again." I heard Seth said that he is sick of being mentioned as a lackey in episode 131 of January 31st.
Get over it.
And I was thinking, why is Vangelis the host of TWIF 2005 Transformers podcast? In summary, there's only one sentence before that, dude. In summary, how did the podcast start and how did he get in charge? Funny face. No offense to Vangelis and Bullrage Man says hi. Don't feel offended, Vangelis, please. Oh, I'm so...
So, Vangelis, how'd you get in charge?
Killed a couple people. It's pretty good. Did we ever share this on the podcast? I can't remember anymore.
We've had different variations on this story, you could say.
Because there was an attempt at a Transformers podcast on TFW years ago in 06, which I was a part of briefly. There were several teams.
I was a part of every step of the way.
Seth was all over it. Defuzz, I believe, was pretty all over that, too. And then that never really seemed to... As far... I was not actually... All I was involved with it to the point of was that I came on for, I think, one test run show, and that was it. So I never really heard anything about it since then. And then in 2008, Super_Megatron wanted to do the podcast and said, hey, Vangelis, let's do this. So we went to the contributors forum for people who donate to the site and said, hey, who wants to be on a podcast? And then everyone who is regularly on here were the only people who replied. So that's how it started, and I recorded that one myself because I was the most all over it at the time. And then since then, I have done all the editing because I am neurotic about wanting to be the big man. So that's how it happened, is that I was there, and then it went from there. And since then, we've had Seth on regularly, who was there technically actually before I was. And then we got Dan Defuzz on a couple times, who was another OG who was involved with the thing before I was sort of spearheading stuff. And that's as far as I know how it went.
Yeah, and with those prototype shows, those early 06 shows, there was only one that was like a kind of a test run thing. Like, oh, let's see how the equipment works and get a bunch of people on. And then there were... There were three, this is definitely going to be the first episodes that never happened.
Was I on one of those? I don't remember anymore.
Yeah, okay. You were on one of those. You might have been on that giant one where there were like 10 people. There were like 10 co-hosts or panelists or however you want to put it. There was one episode that was just ridiculous. Like, we killed Skype. Like, Tricky Disco, you could barely, like, her audio was all screwed up. And then as soon as, like, we were done and people started leaving, and there was only a few of us left in Skype still chatting, she sounded clear as a bell. But just when there were that many people in the one conference call, it didn't work out.
Yeah. And
the format was very different. Like, it was much more restricted as far as time limits and how topics flowed.
As I recall,
it was a very different thing.
There was going to be the editor slash director dude was going to be a non-speaking silent entity who was still present for the podcast, and stuff like that, which is an interesting approach. But I think that our approach has added more longevity to things, and that we're just kind of relying on a smaller core number of people. It's a bit more open form.
I myself wasn't on any of those, but I was also in the contributor section bumping threads every 6 months asking, when are we going to start a podcast? Because I was fairly unhappy with the... we'll say that I felt that there could be better Transformers podcasts out there than what we had, and I was like, we got people who... have abilities here, we should be doing this. Somebody, and I think like every 6 months up until 2 months before we started this one, I was like, come on, anybody? Come on, I know you guys can do it. Official TFW podcast, right? So,
yeah, well, in the mod section, I was pushing real hard for a while. Like, I made up a fake banner for the show. I called it WTF at TFW, the best podcast you'll never hear. and I was asking a bunch, and then at the 07 BotCon, I asked about it in person, and the sort of grunt and then ignore response that I got when I brought up the podcast kind of indicated that maybe I should back off and not bring it up anymore. But as soon as that thread appeared in the contributor forum, I was like, I better be on this show.
I actually, once all the balls got rolling on this thing, I then got a little bit more savvy to how long it had been in a limbo, and I actually felt kind of bad about sort of just showing up and taking reins on a lot of things, where I was like, sup guys, I want to do a podcast, let's do this, let's call it WTF at TFW, because that's what I heard it could be called, and if you guys want to be on it, that'd be great. And afterwards, I was like, man, that probably did not sound very good as a way to kick things off, showing up out of nowhere and going like, hey, so I want to run this thing, even though most of you have been talking about it for years more than I have. What's up?
Yeah, well, I was never worried about that aspect of like who the boss was going to be. I just wanted to be part of it. Like, I wanted to be part of it from the beginning, and I would have been super bummed out if it actually happened and all of a sudden I was not. So,
yeah.
I was just pleased to be included.
And we've been doing it since then, and more podcasts have started, and some have come, some have gone, and it's there's a healthy scene.
And we're friends with a lot of them too.
Yeah, there's a nice big scene of Transformers podcasts out there, and you know, if I were to say anything as to how ours has continued going, I think it's really helped that we are kind of like our own entity. Like we're based out of TFW, we're hosted by TFW, and now that I've started trying to do my own thing with Vaudio Sonic, I am even doubly so appreciate the fact that thanks to TFW, I don't have to care about setting up an RSS feed, setting up iTunes, or even figuring out where I'm going to get my stuff hosted. I just have to make them and put them somewhere that's already in place. But I think it does help that also we are kind of a podcast group first and TFW people second.
Yeah, it's sort of a trade, like for the hosting, for the convenience, for having somewhere to be seen, like the biggest, arguably the biggest fan site for Transformers, like getting on the front page every week and having all our hosting and whatnot handled. And the trade is we're providing the content.
Yeah.
Like we're creating this content, and in exchange, because we're not making money. Like we obviously don't have any advertisers.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome, but we don't. And I think there would be more push to like maybe have started looking into earning a little bit of money, if for nothing else than to defray the cost of hosting and whatnot. But because like when Dan and I were doing game pads, I mean, part of what started pushing me to kind of pull the trigger on ending it was we were getting more and more out of sync of it being a regular weekly show. Stuff I had going on at work was making it more and more difficult to get the editing done. I was working lots of overtime and then essentially only having one day off because I would have to spend a whole day of my weekend editing. And then once we weren't doing it every week and we were paying for Libsyn for the hosting and a Squarespace for the blog that we didn't really utilize, it was like, you know, we have this monthly bill for something we're not really doing.
Yeah,
so that was a bummer to do that.
That was a big learning experience for me when I started looking to find a place to put that first episode of Vaudio Sonic, because I was like, well, I like to export at a high, you know, quality rate. I'm going to have, you know, a 70 megabyte episode that's about 2.5 hours long, so I'm going to find a place to host. It can't be that hard. And I spent like a couple nights trying to compare options and going like, oh man, like, you know, do I want to do this hosting or this hosting? Who's going to give me more space? Who's going to give me more bandwidth? Who's going to, you know, make me my iTunes pages so that I don't have to figure out how to build an RSS feed and all that. So I've always said, like, you know, we're not like, you know, high level TFW staff members doing the TFW podcast, but we are provided a lot of stuff by TFW that otherwise anyone who has started their own podcast would tell you is a bummer to try to figure out. Huh. So, I think that's, but as well, I was saying, go ahead.
Libsyn makes it pretty easy. I mean, yeah, like yeah. They handle the iTunes stuff. They handle the RSS.
No, absolutely, yeah. But
there's a monthly fee for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's, yeah, I mean, the opportunity we've all had, I think, for one, as far as podcasting goes, is very unique, and that, like Vangelis said, I mean, yeah, he said we're kind of podcast first, TFW second. I think just by that he means, like, we run pretty autonomously. There's no one over us from the site, like an admin or a site owner that sits with us and dictates what we do on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
We are very free to be able to create any content we want and host it on a site server that we don't have to pay for. And I think we are all incredibly thankful for the opportunity to do that. And it's just been, you know, most people don't have that opportunity, and I understand that. And we don't take that for granted. We have known for 3 years the unique opportunity we have all had. And I think we're all very thankful and humble for that. But yeah, I do appreciate the fact that, and I even kind of beat myself up over it, that of the opportunity, and I think that we could even do more with what we have, and I mean, I kind of have been putting some thought into that, like, what more can we do with this opportunity, because I don't want to feel like it's going to waste at all, and I don't feel like we're wasting it by any means, but there's always that desire, like, well, you know, we should push this even further and try to do things that that we enjoy and other people enjoy. And but yeah, the opportunity that that Tony Bacala, the TFW owner, has given us all to just basically have free reign to create whatever content we need without, you know, breathing down our back, or to advertise the site every week, that sort of thing. I think he's aware of the fact that he knows if we just provide something fun that everybody listens to, and it certainly will. And we've had many people, like, we joke about it all the time. We'll just say a name, like, you know, another user should make this. And I think we're batting 1,000. One of our listener questions this week, Daniel, came from a Pelican. That was from us. And I mean, we get enjoyment out of that, because it lets us know that people are listening, and it is even bringing more traffic to the site. And we all like TFW. We're all active members there, and even staff members. Mm-hmm. So it's just been a fun trip, and in 2 months it'll be 3 years, and that blows me away.
The place I was going is that I think that the longevity has been helped out by the fact that, as you said, we don't have to worry about how we're going to work TFW into our show. And that gives us a lot of creative freedom, and it takes away a whole lot of pressures that might otherwise be there. Which
I think we did also have a little more oversight at the beginning, like the admin level. But I think we proved in pretty short order that we're not doing anything that is going to present TFW in a bad light. Like, we're not up here cursing up a storm or picking fights with nobody, and when we are critical about something, I think, you know, we never talked about it beforehand. We never laid it down and said, this is going to be our mentality. But I think we've always been like, you know, even when we're tough on something, we're at least fair about it. We're honest. We don't beat our fist on the table and just curse something out. Like, even when we get something crappy, find something good to say about it, too. So,
yeah.
I think we've given them plenty of reason not to worry about us, not to feel like they need to hold our hands and guide us or anything.
All that having been said, let me tell you what my biggest failing has been, and many people will tell you, where the hell is the poncho contest supplemental? That's always going to be there. So
forgot all about that.
Don't think that we're all sitting here patting ourselves on the back, because, you know, damn it, where did I put it? Where did I put the poncho supplemental?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we have a voicemail on the WTF hotline from winner of the contest Crasis asking about that.
Oh dear.
Yeah, we're going to have to answer it, you know, eventually. It's not, we can't just brush it under the rug as if it didn't happen.
Poncho contest? What was that? I don't even like ponchos.
A whatcho contest?
I don't want to start bringing up, you know, cultural caricatures here, and I don't think that anyone really should be bringing. Who would make a poncho contest? Creep would. That's who. But so to answer your question, Daniel came from Pelican. I am offended. damn it. Anyway, let's move out of there and into our very brief, vaguely spoilerous section in which we're going to talk about a video game, primarily. So, buckle your seatbelts.
This is the spoiler section! From this point forward, the virginity of your experience with upcoming Transformers media will be at fatal risk. You have been warned. Turn back now, or bear your penance for eternity.
It's time for some more Dark of the Moon video game news. We've got a list of pre-order and launch boni, or bonuses, as the layman might say. So if you buy this game, there's a good chance you'll get stuff with it. Or not even just this game, but something from this series of games. If you go to GameStop, you'll get Sideswipe as a playable character. You go to Amazon, you'll get Ratchet as a playable character via exclusive code, which probably means that they're sitting right there on the disc and you just have to tweak something to make them work. Other retailers are also doing other launch boni, which I'm going to keep saying because that's how I say it. Channel-wide, which I believe means everywhere. If you get the Wii or DS versions of the Dark of the Moon games, or the Autobot one anyway for the DS, you're going to get a Bumblebee toy. If you get the Decepticon one, you're going to get a Lockdown toy, which makes me think that they're going to be RPMs, because that's the only series I can think of with Bumblebee and Lockdown that would fit as a pack-in with a DS game.
No Legends? Legends wouldn't be possible. I don't remember if there's a Legend Lockdown.
Yeah, it's a thing. I don't know. Like, in that case, I'd kind of be thinking, like, oh man, who are they going to very much approximate into a Lockdown? If you buy the games at Best Buy, you're going to get a free movie ticket to upgrade your ticket to 3D. So you're not going to actually get a free movie ticket. You're just going to get some that lets you substitute in that extra $5 to put on your glasses. So everyone's going to be going to Best Buy. You go to Toys R Us, you get an inverted Bumblebee character skin for the 3DS version of the game. That's very specific. If you go to Target, you're going to get a Bumblebee Deco in-game character for the DS Autobots version of the... So there's DS Autobots and Decepticons and a 3DS version. This is getting crazy. For the Autobots version of the game, and Wii game, and an exclusive Lockdown Deco in-game character for the Decepticons version of the game. Kmart and Sears are going to have an original, limited edition, Transformers, Dark of the Moon comic book from IDW Publishing. So, Seth, I'll go to you first. Are you... How much are you being... Oh, wait, there's pictures right here on the front page! They are RPMs!
Oh.
I just had to scroll down. Damn it. Well, that answers that question. And scroll down and look at that Stealth Force Lockdown. That's kind of badass. Anyway, Seth, how do you feel about some of these pre-order bonuses? Do you think that they are indicative of the death of the video game industry, or do you think that they're just kind of nothing to care about?
Well, speaking of gamepads unplugged, one of Dan's great ideas that came in later episodes was a segment that he titled Games That Come With Crap. And this would have been a Games That Come With Crap segment.
A big one.
and crap didn't always necessarily mean something negative. It's just there's a bunch of crap with this game.
Yeah.
Sometimes crap is pretty cool. But that's a lot of crazy options. I'm not really super psyched with the whole retailer exclusive bonus deal where it's like, okay, well, I want to get Mortal Kombat, but which classic skin do I want the most?
Yeah.
Like, do I want Scorpion or do I want Reptile? Do I want Katana, or do I want blah blah blah? And like in my case with Mortal Kombat, I didn't pre-order it anywhere, which was a very good break. because Toys R Us did this day of deal where he bought that in Portal 2 and he got a $50 gift card.
Oh, did you get in on that?
Oh, yeah. So,
hell yeah. Good man.
So I didn't really care what skin I got that, at that point, because I would much rather get $50 gift card than a specific ninja. But yeah, so hearing that aspect of it, like, oh, you got to go to GameStop if you want. What was it? Sideswipe?
Yeah,
GameStop there. Or you got to go to Amazon for this. So yeah, that's a bummer. I'm just going to get it from wherever it's most convenient, you know. And whatever bonus I get for that, then that's the bonus I got.
That makes it more of an actual bonus in that it's something that you just got for doing what you were going to do anyway.
And with a lot of these skins and stuff, they end up becoming available for everybody eventually anyway.
Yeah.
Even if you got to pay like $5 for a skin pack or something.
And a number of them tend to have the fine print, like in the case of Sideswipe, which is multiplayer only. Which for some people means, yeah, I'm never going to see that skin.
Right. Exactly.
Yep.
So it's just not that impressive. Not that impressive of a lineup of bonuses and whatnot.
Gog, how do you feel about some of these pre-order bonuses?
Can I pay them just to, like, simplify all this in a chart or something? Like, good Lord.
Channel wide.
I thought you were going to say, can I pay extra just to have the game without all this? Just sell me the game.
I don't. The only thing I care about on any of that is the little speed stars lockdown, because I've always wanted one of those and you can't find them anywhere. And in fact, it looks like there's only one on eBay right now for, like, buy it now, $18.
Ew.
So, yeah. And I really want that. I'm not going to buy a video game just to get it, though, I don't think. Especially a DS version. I'm not going to... I don't know. Like, because there's a 3DS version, and now there's DS versions.
I don't know. Through this news story, I just kind of caught on that there are going to be different games for the DS and the 3DS, and the DS is still going to do the two-game deal.
This is new news to me as well, so... I guess we should find out at one point if the DS versions are different than the 3DS, or is it the same game with just little worse graphics and no 3D. So I guess we should probably look into that. Don't really feel like doing that tonight since we just got this information about 45 seconds ago.
I think I will survive waiting till launch to figure out what I want to do, because it's one thing I've learned from the last couple of video game launches is that the portable versions often end up being in stores a while after I buy them.
Yeah. So, I'm not going to take advantage of any of these. At the very least, I'll probably just get like a PS3 version. And even then, I think I'm going to wait for a review and some peer opinions before I delve into a movie game. I'm definitely more excited about this one that High Moon is doing it, for sure. But I'm still going to wait and see what the opinions are first before I pick it up, I think. I guess some of the pre-order bonuses sound cool. That little RPMs lockdown is neat, because at this point, that's probably the best opportunity to get that toy. But it's not enough to entice me to buy a game without looking into it first in this case.
Well, from what I saw, I don't think it's going to be a bad game. Like, maybe it's not going to be, you know, fantastic. I mean, it's not going to be the game of the year by any means, but I mean, as far as the gameplay goes, like the actual mechanics of controlling and everything, if you like Or for Cybertron, you should like this, because it looked pretty much the same as far as the way things moved and looked in that regard. So I'm not worried about not liking the game, but I'll probably get it pretty much right away. I don't know if I'm going to feel that it's necessary to pre-order it. And that one detail was kind of weird at first, how one of the stores, I can't keep track, had a skin for the 360 version, but not the PlayStation version. And at first I thought that was weird, And then I thought, well, maybe they just don't expect the PlayStation Network to be back. And so they're not going to bother.
Boom.
How unfortunately true. What's the current word on that? Like maybe next week is currently the statement we got?
I think the last I heard was a few more days.
They've been saying that for...
Which is what they said, like a week ago.
It's been a few more days for sure.
Well, what's going to be crazy is next weekend I'm going on my houseboat trip, and one of the guys does internal security for Sony. So, I think the first thing that I'm going to say to him is, so anything interesting happen at work lately?
And then he'll throw you off the boat.
Sure.
Or he'll just throw himself off the boat.
Show up in an anonymous t-shirt and see what happens.
Show up wearing a Guy Fawkes mask.
Yeah.
Dropping some slogans. Up? Hey man, we are Legion.
Bro fist me over here.
I was going to ask you guys if you had any opinions on
just a quick disclaimer. Like, I understand that Anonymous denies having anything to do with it, but some people, like people in Sony, believe that they do. So that's the only reason I'm making that joke. Please do not come get me, Anonymous. I think you're fantastic.
I have been fully supporting Project Chainology for years, so please leave me alone as well. I was going to ask if either of you guys had any thoughts on some of that Dark of the Moon video game trailers and reveal stuff from last week, just like them showing off a whole bunch of gameplay and stuff. I mean, Seth, you were at an event to probably see some far more interesting versions of that, but it kind of cemented to me that it looks like it'll be, at worst, a very solid mod of War for Cybertron. And then, at best, maybe having a few little evolutions in how they do things.
Yeah, well, like you guys were saying in the last show, it's good that they're not trying to recreate the story of the movie. Because like Aaron said, it gets rough when you're trying to take a 2-hour movie and turn it into a 10, 12-hour long game. So, and in my opinion, the movie tie-in games that have worked the best have been that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like set in between or set just before. And I'm optimistic for this game. I mean, when we were going into War for Cybertron, I was a lot less. Like, of course I wanted it to be good, but there wasn't really anything that good to compare it to.
Yeah.
And same studio, same general framework, like engine wise. Some changes, like you don't pick a character at the beginning of a level, you have your set character, but that's, if it serves the story. I mean, if they did that just because it's easier and it's a way to cut a corner, then that's a bummer. If they did it because it lets them do a more concise, interesting story, then okay. But time will tell on that.
Alrighty. And Gog, did you have any other thoughts on the video game, just from all the little reveals over the last little while? Or
I agree with what you said. I mean, it looks like it has the strengths of the War for Cybertron game. So I'm hoping it turns out well. That's all. I'm hoping it will. I'm not expecting it to be bad. I'm tempering my enthusiasm so that when I hear it's good, I'll be like, okay, cool, get it, and be like, all right, yeah, it's pretty good. I don't want to delve headfirst in and then be really disappointed.
Yeah,
because I'm hoping that it turns out better than War for Cybertron, to be honest.
I'm just gonna wait. War for Cybertron.
I did. That's what I'm saying. I hope they take what War for Cybertron did and make it even better.
Oh,
so you're hoping for a step forward rather than a step sideways kind of thing,
or even step back. Yeah, I mean, game publishers, especially before the game is out, they show you what they want you to see,
And it's nothing against Timoon. I'm not accusing them of anything, and it just, I hope it turns out well.
keep your expectations sobered using that term again.
Yeah. There's just been a lot of stuff recently that I've just found really disappointing, so it's just, I don't know. Maybe with the games lately, I just feel kind of jaded, like with the whole Dragon Age 2 thing. Like, I'm really disappointed with what I saw that game was in the end, and it really kind of bummed me out because Dragon Age 1 is a really great game.
The whole Portal 2 thing really bummed you out also.
Come on now. That's Valve. I'm a Valve fanboy for a reason, okay? Valve doesn't let you down.
Oh, don't worry, BioWare's...
But that's because Valve puts games in hiatus for 5 years.
BioWare's got your back. They're taking all that role-playing junk out of Mass Effect 3, so you'll be set. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, that's another thing. I don't like what I'm hearing about that. Because all the updates that are coming from Mass Effect are coming straight from the mouths of top EA executives. I'm not hearing it from BioWare, I'm hearing it from EA. Yeah, we're changing the game to make it have a wider appeal. Uh-huh. But.
Yep.
No. Yeah, I don't have anything against it. I like what I've seen so far, and I hope that the final product turns out well. I'm just gonna wait and hear what everybody else says before I drop down my 50 bones, or 60 bones for it.
I would be okay with a small step back. I would be happy for a sidestep, like an equal quality would just be fine with me. I don't expect it to be a step forward. Hmm. Like, maybe graphically. I was kind of impressed with some of the graphics I saw. Like, especially the city levels look pretty cool. And that close-up of Ironhide's face that we got to see looked pretty cool. So maybe there's some graphical improvement. I don't expect a big leap forward in the gameplay mechanic.
All right. Well, there's one other little thing I thought we could maybe touch on here, just if you have the interest, is another thing from last week that I thought was really pertinent and thus might carry over to this week, which is the Amazon leak. In case any of you listening now didn't hear last week, I have no intention of actually covering the spoilers that came from the Amazon leak, but I did find the leak itself to be kind of interesting. I was wondering if either of you guys had any thoughts on that or the aftermath of it. Like, do you think Amazon might get in any kind of trouble for blowing a big budget Paramount movie, or do you think that Amazon could just kind of go like, we screwed up, don't give us crap about it?
I don't think they'd get in any real trouble. Like, maybe Paramount sends over a stern letter, but in the end, what are they going to do? Are they going to try to strong-arm Amazon and say, well, none of our DVDs will be made available for you to sell ever again? And Amazon's like, whatever.
That's where a lot of my interest came from. Because, I mean, you know, you'd see anyone who went onto the Don Murphy forum saw Don Murphy apparently get pretty mad about it. You know, people go like, oh man, that must have busted an NDA somewhere on something. But at the same time, Amazon is a monolith, and I'm curious if they act like last week I said it, I'm wondering if Amazon even has to worry that it happened. Like,
well, and then like it's kind of big news in our circles, but like there's people at work that like the Transformer movies, but they're not Transformer fans. Mm-hmm. They have no idea this even happened. Like, they probably don't even know that there is a comic book, let alone that it got leaked on Amazon. So I think in the grand scheme of things, it's barely even a blip on the radar.
Yeah.
It's big on our world, but not amongst the normies.
Did either of you catch wind of any of those spoilers, or did you stay clear of them? Because last week I noticed like the three of us had basically not actually heard any of them. We all managed to stay clear.
Yeah, I'm pretty free and clear of it. I think I kind of picked up a little bit of what I think might have been one from having to do some mod business in the movie forum, but that was also kind of it was vague.
Mm.
and it had to do with Shockwave, but it was really vague. And just in case, I don't want to repeat it you guys, but
I forgot that you're still moderating the movie for him. Are you looking forward to another round of that come the summer?
Should be a blast.
getting your riot gear on. Busting out tear gas.
Busting out something.
Busting out the flaming bags of poo. Throw that at people. Gog.
I mean, it's already. I mean, that form's always ridiculous. I mean, it's business as usual.
Gog, did you catch any of that spoiler stuff yourself, or did you?
Miss most I of saw it? A bit of one involving something that I'm not going to say, but yeah, again, it was kind of vague. Not sure how it's actually going to play out. Again, it was just because of some moderation stuff. I don't actually moderate in the movie for Mike Seth, but a bunch of people cried in unison at people posting some spoilers, and so when that happens, I am gonna probably see it. So we'll see. I mean, like little stuff like character reveals and stuff is fine, but I think we're at the point now where the movie is about a month and a half away. Actually 2.5 months, isn't it? Or no, a month and a half. Yeah. Because it's July 4th weekend, right? Or the beginning of first week of July?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, about a month and a half. So, yeah, I mean, any spoilers now are going to be like, oh, here's some stuff from the official novel, or here's some stuff from the comic book, and it's just going to be people now repeating plot points instead of it being like little leaks that we can all kind of drool over. So.
Yeah, it's good. As I said last week, all these big spoilers now are just going to be things we're going to talk about when we inevitably do lengthy podcast sections about Dark of the Moon after we've seen it. So,
yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I haven't seen anything of any thing worth speaking of or that I want to even follow up on or know more about until I actually see the movie, because as much as we like to cover it, I think we all would like to at least sit down and have some surprises and be able to enjoy it ourselves. So I think from this point out, I'm for the most part I'm going to try to make it as spoiler free as possible for myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wanted to see how you guys were standing on that. We can give the listeners a bit of an idea of how we're approaching it as well. Hopefully you guys who are really eager about the movie, really eager to hear some discussion about it, you know, just be patient. Think of it as now you're in that final road waiting for the movie, and you're also in that final road waiting for the podcast to talk about that movie. We're all kind of tying together on the same highway. It's cosmic. Anyway, that's the spoiler section. That's the podcast. Gog, can you tell me again that hotline number?
Yeah, in a second.
it's a bunch of numbers.
It's, yeah, I mean, it's right here as I
right there click on that notepad thing.
Yep. Yeah,
right there. Fishing.
I mean, I'm looking at it.
Yeah,
you know, we're
leading up to it. I just want to make sure.
I'm trying to figure out the best way to say it.
I want to make sure the audience who are listening to this know what we're doing. That we're pulling out the number for the voicemail.
Yeah, because I certainly wasn't the one who chose the number or anything, so I shouldn't be the one that knows it above anyone else.
No,
it's giving the listener a chance to get a piece of scrap paper and a pencil so they could write it down.
HB number 2 mechanical.
Mm-hmm. And that number is 318-775-9830.
Are you just doing it the one time?
Well, everybody got paper and pencil.
Yeah, so. We gave them time this time.
Okay. So. Well, I mean, I'm just saying, some people are very slow writers, and I don't know if you want to coddle them or if you want to kind of, you know, throw them out of the nest and tell them to man up and learn how to write fast.
I did all three.
Well, this has been a learning experience for us all, and I think we're all a little bit stronger coming out of it. So until next time, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Vangelis. That's been Gog Dog and Seth Buzzard. You've been listening to WTF at TFW, home of the Whopper. Actually, I hate Whoppers. I haven't had one in ages. Actually, you know what? I probably love Whoppers, but I only ever have them at Vancouver Airport.
So. No, the last time you went to Burger King, you went on for like 5 minutes about how it sucked.
Yeah, you're bitching and moaning all about how horrible it was, and it was disgusting,
when was
and
I
you
at a,
wanted to die.
When was I at Burger King? I don't remember anymore.
I think it's when you secretly came to the San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah.
And didn't tell me because you hate me.
Yeah, that's right. That's when I was coming down, and I was all like, hey, there's another Koi Tower. Well, we're not the home of the Whopper.
My friend
then.
That lives in Florida, California, knows about these.
Yeah, we got these down in the South Coast. It's pretty sweet.
No, that's when we learned that you thought I lived in Florida.
Yeah.
With everybody else.
Well, that's been WTF at TFW, home of the Double Baconator. Seriously, though, I love the Baconator.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Wendy's is better than Burger King.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Yeah.
Oh, is that a Wendy's thing?
Yeah, it's a bacon-based hamburger called the Double Baconator. You can get a single Baconator, but nobody gets single Baconators.
You can get triple Baconators.
Oh,
yeah.
How does it stack up against the ultimate bacon cheeseburger from Jack in the Box?
We don't have Jack in the Box here anymore.
I don't have Jack in the Box up here at all.
Oh, man.
Jack in the Box has become mom and pop. Brick and mortar.
Screw In-N-Out Burger for BotCon. We got to get you guys to a Jack in the Box.
Okay. I'll go to Jack in the Box if you go to a Five Guys.
If there was a Five Guys around here, I would.
Every time I've heard you mention Five Guys, it's you posting a picture of a giant greasy patty and you saying, no.
I should push stop, by the way.
Oh, yeah, I should too. Damn it. Well, you got your your intro.